Matthew O'Coyne has accomplished more than some musicians do in a lifetime, and he's 24 years old. He has conducted the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, the Rome Opera Orchestra, and the LA Philharmonic. He is the youngest assistant conductor ever at the Metropolitan Opera, and he is now working on operas commissioned by the Lyric Opera of Chicago and the American Repertory Theater. Oh yeah, and 3 years ago, he graduated summa cum laude from Harvard, where he studied with the poet Jory Graham. Right now, Matt O'Coyne is working on a song cycle based on the poems of James Merrill, and he's agreed to let us listen in to some of that work in progress today. Matthew O'Coyne, welcome to Studio 360.
It's great to be here.
So given that summary of your prodigal young life so far, you are naturally compared all the time to Mozart and Leonard Bernstein. I might personally throw in Edgar Varèse as well, but it's inevitable that you get those comparisons. But how do you feel at age 24 about the extremism of them?
Look, I don't want to be the next anybody. I want to be me.
Yeah. You are now working on a song cycle based on the poetry of the late James Merrill. What attracted you?
You know, Merrill gets compared to Mozart sometimes. But the thing that they have in common that's really specific and that drew me to Merrill is that the sweetest parts are also the parts that hurt the most. And the reasons for it are musical. Merrill loves musical effects like puns. He'll make you hear alternate meanings of a word when he's using a word a particular way, and it's like it's resonance. And I find it so rich to set to music.
So would you mind reading one of James Merrill's poems for us?
Sure. This is a poem called A Downward Look. Seen from above, the sky is deep. Clouds float down there, foam on a long, luxurious bath. Their shadows, over limbs submerged in air, over protuberances, faults, a delta thicket, glide. On high, the love that drew the bath and scattered it with salt still radiates new projects, old as day, and hardly registers the tug when, far beneath, a wrinkled baby hand happens upon the plug.
That is lovely. And also, sometimes Merrill's poetry can be full of classical and exotic allusions and obscurities. That one, not at all.
No, I think it's a case in which Merrill's really a prophet of global warming. You know, it's this vision of being in an airplane and seeing the sky reflected in the water. It's a very modern, sort of a godlike perspective. And then at the end, the wrinkled baby hand is the power of humanity happening
right
upon the plug of the bathtub that is the ocean. And, you know, maybe it's like popping the ozone layer and letting the bath out.
Or the final scene of 2001, A Space Odyssey. So you say, okay, I love this poem. I want to make a song out of this. What do you do first?
I feel out the way the poem moves. This poem is spoken from a unique perspective. If you're in an airplane, you're kind of the still center of this seascape and skyscape of motion. It's a false sense of stability. You know, this song begins with this kind of crashing counterpoint on a single chord that doesn't change for quite some time. It's the sky flowing by, the sea flowing by. If I slow the motion of the beginning of the song down, it's actually really simple two-part counterpoint, that is two lines that kind of mirror each other the way the sky and the sea mirror each other in the poem. It's kind of motion within a single harmonic region so that when it hits heavy weather, it feels all the more seismic because we've been in this very sort of, like I said, a false sense of stability, of being outside the whirlwind.
And then at what point do you start figuring out how particular musical moments correspond to particular words?
In this case, I think the words should float above this texture.
Uh-huh.
So that when it begins, seen from above, the sky is deep.
Seen from above, the sky is
deep, and so forth. The voice is the sort of still center around which this landscape is moving. That's the perspective that felt right for this song.
Yeah. So as you're musically aiming toward this final image of this wrinkled baby's hand pulling the plug, do you have that figured out before you have the rest figured out?
Yeah, the meat of the song is what develops last for me. Uh-huh. You find the world that the song lives in, and you find the maximum sort of pressure point, that kind of dynamism, and then you figure out how you get there. It's like solving a puzzle.
And so how long does it take to get what you've played? This basic musical notion, is that then days, weeks, before you feel like, yeah, I'm pretty much done with this?
Totally varies. One thing happens to me all the time, which is that I wrestle with a particular piece for 5 weeks, and then I finish it, and then the next day a piece like drops as if from a helicopter into my head almost fully formed. And that's never the piece that I was expecting to write. So it's very unpredictable.
And then in those instances, you throw out what you've done and say, oh, that's it.
Yeah, I tend to trust the unexpected arrivals.
Yeah. And you started composing many years ago, right? You were a child, a little child.
Yeah, I was 6 or so. I mean, I just wanted to make stuff up. The piano was the instrument I chose, but that was just the way to make stuff up.
And what was the first thing you made up?
It was this strange thing made of fifths, you know, that interval. It was very ugly. I think it was because I'd only played so-called pretty music before then. I wanted to make the ugliest thing I could.
So really, you were already, it's ontogeny recapitulating phylogeny. You were already at 5 rejecting the beautiful canon.
Well, loving it, but knowing I needed to do something a little different.
Huh.
I think the first thing I learned to play, apart from Ode to Joy, was the Gilligan's Island theme. I don't know how beautiful that, you know, like. Oh, wait, those are fifths. So that's where I got it, clearly.
Huh. So it's all that 3-hour tour is where it all came from. And then you composed an opera at 10 or 11 about one of my children's favorite books of all time, the Redwall books.
Mm-hmm.
So had you heard enough opera at 10 or 11 to say, okay, I get this?
I loved to make stuff up at the piano. Yeah. I loved to read. It seemed like a natural way to bring them together.
Yeah.
I hope that piece never sees the light of day.
Really? I could see it having a, you know, lucrative touring life.
Well, let's talk afterwards, actually. That's an idea.
I mean, I remember by 10 or 11, I was writing things. I thought, okay, this is reasonable. Maybe I could keep doing this. Is that what you felt at 11?
Yeah. And then I had a kind of crisis about it when I was 12 or 13, where I was playing more out at contemporary music festivals. And I just didn't like the atmosphere in which this music was being born, especially when I could compare it with playing in a rock band with my friends. I just barely started to do.
Did your time in a rock band and doing jazz and stuff have any permanent effects on how you compose music?
Yes. I think everyone should learn jazz at some point. It's so liberating.
Basically the improvisational aspect of it?
Yeah, and the independence that it teaches you. I still think that classical musicians often are not taught rhythm in a really rigorous way.
Huh.
Whereas with a jazz musician, you're always learning about how to feel beats that you're not playing and being able to sort of, you know, go. Or whatever. You have to feel all the silences inside of yourself with total conviction if you're going to stand up there and take a solo. And I think for me, an important next step in how music's taught in this country is to bring that to the conservatories.
How do you get your contemporaries, my contemporaries, but people, and especially young people, to care about classical music?
You drag them into the room and you play it for them at close range. You know, I have this concert series at a museum near Boston where we've done stuff like the Berg Violin Concerto, which is a really thorny piece, with the orchestra sitting among the audience. It's like a pizza with alternate slices of orchestra and audience, and the violin soloist in the center, like theater in the round. And we actually had people coming up to us afterwards and saying that was like a rock concert. It was sort of immersive and overwhelming. And for me, music, including classical music, is cathartic and overwhelming, and I want people to feel it that way.
Matt O'Coyne, it has been fascinating talking with you and getting a bit of a glimpse of your creative process. Thank you.
Thanks, Kurt. It's been a pleasure.
And would you be willing to play us out with a downward look?
Sounds good.
The composer Matthew O'Coyne. We'll check in with him later this year to see how the new song cycle is coming along. In the meantime, you can hear him playing a song based on a different poem at studio360.org.